Well, good day again. We want to finish our discussion of the Great War, or the war to end all wars. Nobody knows it's World War One until the very end, when a certain German leader predicts that there'll be another war to settle some of the differences between, or that had come up as a result of the Great War, and he missed it only by a couple weeks. He missed the outbreak of World War II only by a couple of weeks. As we left our last lecture, America was mobilizing for war, and that word mobilizing becomes very important. As we said, we saw America move from butter to guns, mobilizing for the war effort. American factories that had previously made the tins for candy to be put into are now making artillery shells. Good example of mobilizing for the war. Another example was the 1917 Selective Service Act that put a lot of men into the service. In 1918, the great American artist James Montgomery Flagg will design the famous I Want You poster that we've all seen, where Uncle Sam is pointing directly at us. And of course, this was a major recruiting poster for volunteers, not necessarily draftees, but these were two good examples of mobilizing for the war effort. We mentioned the Great Migration. We mentioned also women going into the factories. This will be a major reason why you eventually have a 19th Amendment being passed by the House and the Senate in 1920, and also being okayed by the states. Tennessee was the last state to be the three-fourths needed to ratify the 19th Amendment. And so that's a major shift in American history, because now women will have the right to vote across the board. And one of the reasons this happens is because women were eventual and just very, very helpful to the war effort, working in factories, making all manner of things, welding at the shipyards in Norfolk, and also proving themselves to other particularly men who did not think that women were smart enough or physical enough to do men's work. And women proved them wrong in this time. And so this was great for women. It was great for the country, have a 19th Amendment that eventually will give women the right to vote. As we mentioned previously, there were two things that ended the Progressive Era. And those two things happened to be the Great War and the flu epidemic. On the heels of the war, whether it began in Kansas or not, but that is a theory that the Spanish influenza began on a military base in Kansas and then spread to basically the rest of the world and killed 40 million people worldwide. But the great influenza outbreak of 1918, a bird flu, will really change things on the heels of World War One. One of my statistics says that one out of every four of peoples in the U.S. fell victim, and over 500,000 Americans died as a result of the Spanish flu. So the war itself, the devastation of the war, and also the flu epidemic, and the fact that the United States loses over 100,000 casualties in a year and a half of war will lead to a period of disillusionment instead of progressivism. You know, we know the United States carried itself, the United States Army carried itself very valiantly in the war effort. The Marines at Belleau Wood, the Army at Cantigny, and of course there's no bigger place for the United States military in World War One than in the Argonne Forest. In the Argonne Forest campaign of 1918, the United States loses 50% of all the casualties that it will lose in the war. You know, this is where Cher Ami saves members of the 77th Division, the Lost Battalion. This is also where Sergeant York wins the Medal of Honor by single-handedly capturing over, 20 machine gun nests of the Germans, and does it quite peacefully. Okay, so just, some things to think about there. But and there's also a very famous picture taken of American doughboys in the Argonne Forest brandishing a German Chicot machine gun one of the most unreliable machine guns in the war. Well, let's move from thinking about the war to the peace, okay? Like I said previously, in 1918, Woodrow Wilson is really developing his 14 points, and these were his plans for peace without victory. In other words, he wanted to see a new world order. In the olden times, in European fighting, the winners always set the terms, and the losers always had to pay. And with 40 countries or more, plus their colonies involved in this war, you know, Woodrow Wilson hoped that things would be a little bit different. So his plan for peace without victory, the 14 points, encouraged democracy, encouraged freedom, encouraged, for example, no colonies. He wanted the European countries, the imperial countries, to give up their colonies. He wanted freedom of the seas. He definitely wanted to see a reduction in armaments. He wanted conquered land returned to countries previously who had owned it. And the 14 points, you know, argued for these things, like no secret treaties and lower tariffs and self-determination for each country in the world. And but his baby was a new worldwide organization, the League of Nations. These ideas did not sit well with the big power three of Europe, Mr. Orlando of Italy, Mr. Clemenceau of France, and Mr. David Lloyd George of England. You know, these guys wanted to see Germany pay, wanted to see Germany blame for the war. And they looked at Woodrow Wilson crossing the ocean as, you know, somebody a little bit younger in attitude, and also just somebody not completely with the history of European wars and so forth. Because Russia had gone independently and signed their own treaty with Germany in 1917 and had gone through a communist revolution, Russia will not be invited to the peace table at King Louis's palace at Versailles, just 8 miles outside of Paris, nor will Germany, because there was this feeling that, hey, we don't want to deal with, you know, a country that has gone communist, and also the loser doesn't need to be invited to the conference. So Wilson goes in with 14 points. He will take a break during the conference talks. He will go home, and he will be very hopeful that the United States Senate, largely Republican, will pass the Treaty of Versailles, because in his mind he hopes to have the 14 points in it. He hopes to have some of his great ideas in it. Ironically, of Wilson's 14 points, 13 will be taken out and not approved by the Europeans at the peace table, and only one, this idea for a League of Nations, is going to survive. Henry Cabot Lodge, the leading Republican senator in the United States, will basically try to continue the United States on an isolationist track. That had been largely the American foreign policy since the times of George Washington. And so Henry Cabot Lodge really felt like that the League of Nations would threaten the United States' ability to stay out of foreign affairs. And there were basically two kinds of senators that had ideas about the League of Nations. A group of senators called the Irreconcilables was absolutely set against it. No way possible. There was another group called the Reservationists, and they had some issues with the League of Nations. They worried about maintaining America's isolationism. But in the end, the United States does not ratify, the United States Senate does not ratify the Treaty of Versailles with the League of Nations in it. And that's going to be an issue for us. You know, by the 1930s, most people realized that the Treaty of Versailles that ended the Great War was a very unjust peace. Germany is sole blame for the war, made to sign War Guilt Clause, Article 231, which blames them for the war. Again, Russia is not invited, so very hard to have a just peace when all the players are not invited to the table. And then, of course, the League of Nations as a group will be set up, but the United States does not join it, which largely makes the League of Nations weak as a world body. And by the late 1930s, most countries, Japan, good example, Germany, good example, are stepping out and stepping away from the League of Nations and making their own treaties and so forth. Well, World War I ends. The Great War ends, like I said, to the tune of over 100,000 Americans killed and wounded, to the tune of 18 million men killed and wounded. But there were at least 18 million casualties from the Great War. Some estimates are more than 20 million casualties. At least a good bit, at least half of that number were civilians. The old empires will break down. The Ottoman Empire in the Middle East will be broken up. And British and French mandates soon thereafter will create the modern countries of Iran, Iraq, and Syria. The Austria-Hungarian Empire will be broken up, eventually creating new countries like Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia, although Yugoslavia is then broken up into at least six other different countries eventually in the latter part of the 20th century. And then this fact that Russia has decided to have a Bolshevik revolution and embrace socialist and communist principles will have a huge effect on America's relationship with Russia over the next many, many years. The war cost a lot of money. As Americans move back from guns to butter, there'll be a huge isolationism push. There'll be a lot of inflation in the United States. There'll be a backlash against immigrants who, some believe, have created the war. There'll also be a very famous court case in 1917-1918 called Schenck versus the United States. And this was a very important free speech case that the Supreme Court will decide. Charles Schenck had been passing out anti-war literature. He is arrested under the Sedition Act. And one of the things that the Supreme Court will decide, a very famous jurist by the name of Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. will decide that in times, he'll write the main opinion, and he will decide in the clear and present danger test that in times of national crisis, free speech can be limited if it presents a clear and present danger to the United States. That'll be a very important court case that we might discuss a little bit more in class, but it certainly sets up some of the free speech issues for the remainder of American history into the 20th century. Thank you.